You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The flea is an off-Broadway theater name for a small insect that gets under your skin and just won't leave you alone. After you see their latest production, The Great Recession, you'll understand why that name makes sense. It's an evening of six short plays dealing with the economy, and they range in tone from hilarious to the irritating and then to the downright scary. Two of the playwrights join me today. Adam Rapp's The Kitchen Timer opens the evening, and Will Eno's Unum closes it. And I guess the run is until the end of the month. It's a pleasure to have them join me today on our show. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Weren't these plays commissioned by the Flea? How does that work? Do they send you a written proposal and then you say, yeah, I'll do it, or no, I don't want to do it?
Sort of. Jim, I think, came up with the idea in maybe April, May, something like that, and we all started talking about it.
This is Jim Simpson.
This is Jim Simpson, sorry. And my first thought was, it might be as interesting if he got six economists to write about their love lives or their first pet or something like that, and just to see what unconsciously arose in their plays. But he chose six playwrights to write about economics, and we, by definition, probably don't know that much about money, but here we are.
Well, Adam, your play reveals you know – well, Will, your play reveals that you know a lot about money. Did you feel you knew a lot about money too, Adam?
No, in fact, I think I'm as ignorant as anybody about money, and it's probably why I didn't last in a 9-to-5 world for very long. You know, I think for me the scary part of it was I don't know how to write short plays very well, and it's such a short amount of time to pull a moment off, and also I don't read The Economist, and I'm not big up on the Times with that, so I had to kind of reinvent and reconnect to the issues that are out there.
Well, what about that problem of writing a short play? A 10-minute play is a sketch or a skit usually, isn't it? How do you avoid falling into that trap? Will?
I don't know if I do, but it's funny. I think the only we have notions about what a 10-minute play should be, and that's sort of the only stumbling block about writing a 10-minute play. Because if you think, you know,
it's a scene.
Yeah, well, I mean, meaningful things have happened in your life that only took 15 seconds and changed your life forever. And I don't think the rules are probably that different. Just more concentrated, something like that. I don't know.
My fear is generally, like, when I see a lot of short things, they can feel sketchy. But when I see a great short play, I can be as affected or I can be as transported as when I see a full-length thing. So that I was just worried about getting into that sort of sketch comedy territory and not saying something important about an important issue.
Well, there are any number of one-act plays, but very few 10-minute plays. Is it harder or easier to write something with a given theme, especially when you haven't come up with it yourself?
Yeah, I resist. I always, whenever someone comes up to me and says, hey, I have a great idea for you, I have a really willful resistance to it. So when Jim
approached... And your name isn't even Will. That's
no,
the other guy here.
That's in his name. When Jim approached me, I was first terrified just because of the short form. And then my next question was, well, how much am I going to get paid? Which is ironic considering the subject matter. And is this going to be worth my time? And of course, all of those challenges scared me enough. I generally like to walk toward things that scare me, you know, especially in this business. So I took the challenge and had fun with it.
Well, the six plays are so different, it's hard to imagine that they were all written in response to the same request. Were there any criteria?
I kind of dropped the ball on that one because they were meant to be about how does this recession affect people who are in their mid-20s, late-20s, which are the ages of the BATS, which are the resident apprentice acting company, which is sort of what the thing is all about. I did that a little bit. Adam did that very well, and everyone else did that very well.
Had you worked with the Flea before?
We both had, yeah.
Yeah, I'd done a play called Bingo with the Indians there a couple years ago, and I directed another playwright's play, Julian Shepard's Los Angeles, 3 years ago, and I know he's done a couple of things there, too.
Does the company have a mission, do you think? Because these plays have political implications.
I mean, the thing that is really interesting to me about this whole project is that there is a resident company of 50-some bats. They basically donate their time for free. They also put about 5 hours of work into the theater a week. So they're all putting their energy and time into something that is discussing the recession, which is discussing their lives as actors, which is, you know, basically they're doing free work. And I'm really moved by that, actually. And the company that Jim's assembled this time is, I have to say, they're really top-notch.
Well, do you write with the company in mind, or just assume that Jim's going to assign the right part to the right person?
Maybe a little bit. I think Adam knew a lot of actors a little bit better. But just quick on the mission thing, and you would have to ask Jim Simpson and Carol Ostro are the people who've run this for so many years. And I think if anything, it's more of an aesthetic mission, which is just to put things on and make things happen. And it really, I'm not a person who normally gets into the spirit of a thing, but I've very much gotten into the spirit of the whole thing, which is, you know, just let's get these things written and get them on stage and have someone memorize them and act them.
And keep it down to 10 minutes.
Well,
Adam, the premise of your play is a woman is being paid to kill a baby on TV unless an audience member is willing to murder her and be paid for it. Is this a commentary on the capitalist system or on the excesses of reality TV?
Maybe a little bit of both. Honestly, the idea came initially because I play basketball 3-4 times a week with these guys at the 14th Street Y, and I was talking to this one guy who was out of work, and he was a security guard, and he was talking about how he wanted to rally together a bunch of sort of laborers, who were security guards and people who work, you know, blue collar jobs who are out of work, to try to form some sort of new age union, I guess, and to try to get their to stabilize their insurance packages and stuff like that. And he was telling me like some of the stories that came out of some of his contact with these people, and I was just thinking of these big job fairs that are happening all across the country, and if this extremist group were to recruit a few people to sort of, in a coliseum-like way, put on display in front of a live audience of paying ticket buyers, what would that do, and how high could I raise the stakes? And, you know, of course, there's the reality TV thing of what people are willing to do for a lot of money, and it's actually a very little amount of money considering, you know, reality TV. It's $25,000, and to me that was just a comment on, you know, the shrinking dollar. So it was sort of a wild idea, and I had to grounded in reality as I worked on it.
Well, the play requires a complex technological production. Did you plan the staging logistics in your head as you wrote it?
A little bit, yeah, because I thought I was going to direct it, and I knew I was going to have to actually video a live infant. And, you know, considering the subject matter, it's not easy to approach a mother about videoing her 6-week-old daughter. Fortunately, one of the directors who was directing Itamar Moses' play, Michelle, was kind enough to donate her daughter. it was actually a lot of fun to do it, and she has a really cute baby, so that was nice.
Well, there's always a problem when you have a baby in a play, because everybody knows it's a doll, and you came up with a solution that actually works. I heard someone asking on the way out, was that a real baby? So it's obviously been very effective.
Yeah, it's a reborning doll.
Well, your work is usually described as non-linear, metaphysical, ontological, but this play is extremely linear. It follows the path of a single dollar bill that unites the fate of people all over the economic spectrum. The same sort of structure as a play like La Ronde, except that the medium of exchange is different.
The linearity kind of breaks down. I chose to lose track of the dollar in the last scene and sort of gave up. On the one hand, a little bit lost interest in it as a playwright, and also as a person thinking about playwriting, decided that more important things should come along, and was happy to wave goodbye to the dollar.
Well, one of my staff members saw the play with her husband, who's a banker, and he was impressed by the amount and the accuracy of the financial information in it. Did you have to do a lot of research for a 10-minute play?
10 or 12 years ago, I was a broker trainee on Wall Street, and I made $6 an hour and learned almost nothing. But I've always been sort of the way a person who doesn't really care about sports reads the sports pages is that I read the business section just to see sort of if I recognize names and stuff. Hey, I have to say just quick, Adam's play, I had very close to having a panic attack the first time I saw that play. And that it's partly because I just sort of suffer rolling panic attacks throughout the day and week, but also it's a pretty serious thing and really well directed by Adam and really well acted.
Well, we invited the two of you because we thought both of your works were really good.
Huh. Yeah, I can only say nice things about his too.
The scene with the investment salesman is hilarious, but so insightful of the kind of thinking that got us into this predicament. At one point, potential investor says, a bunch of regular people set up in houses that cost millions. That doesn't sound right. And the salesman replies, oh, once they're in the house, they are millionaires. It's all magic.
Well, that's a big paraphrase there. But yeah.
I was taking notes quickly in the dark.
Yeah. I found it very hard to get angry at find a single point for to be angry, because it does seem that there was greed up and down and left to right. And
well, are you offended as a writer when a salesman describes the written description of an investment package he's selling as literature?
It does crack me up when people say, "I want you to look at some literature," and you see it's a four color pamphlet that about a urinary tract disorder or something like that.
Well, it seems to me both of you want to have reactions from your audience. Adam, your play reminded me a little of the no-holds-barred living theater-type political productions of the 1960s where the audience and the actors interact. Are you hoping to incite a revolution?
Maybe. If I can get somebody to accidentally stand up, I'd be pretty happy. It's almost happened a couple times. There's a guy who stands up and challenges the girl who's going to dispatch the baby. And it's in there.
You get so angry.
Yeah, and I think some of the audience members sometimes feel really tense. I had an actor friend call me the other night, an older actor named Guy Boyd, who said that he knows my work. We've done like 9 plays together, and he said that at that point he literally felt himself keeping himself in his chair because he felt like he was going to have to get up and stop him. And that was pretty flattering coming from someone who knows all my stuff and all my flaws and stuff. So
you started as a novelist. What got you interested in writing plays?
You know, I started to go see stuff because my little brother's an actor, and he was in 6 Degrees of Separation by John Guare, and I was really blown away by that play. And I had grown up with my little brother doing musicals, and I wasn't as drawn to musicals, and I was hearing You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and things like that all the time in my room, and I thought that's what theater was. And then when I moved to New York and I saw John Guare's work and some other people's, Nikki Silver and Edwin Sanchez and people like that, I was really kind of drawn to the darker stories, and I figured this would be fun to try.
It's always interesting to try to figure out why somebody has decided to write novels or short stories or screenplays or plays. There's always a trade-off, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the novel is more fun, and I'm more stable when I write it, and it's more of a meditative experience when I work on it. The playwriting, when I actually write the play, it's more... it kind of grabs me by the throat, and I lose control of my life, and I have to finish it before I forget it, I wish I was more mature about it.
I read where Jim Simpson at the Flea said that he was looking for the perspective of a generation younger than the baby boomers, and I guess that's why he approached the two of you. Do you think of yourself as Gen Xers? Because Will, hasn't one critic described you as the Samuel Beckett of the Jon Stewart set?
One critic has. I don't. Yeah, we all feel in some ways part of some generation. Then, and at the same time, all maybe particularly writers feel yourself in this weird, timeless sort of trying to find a generation or trying to figure out exactly what time you might have been best in, something like that. But I feel like I was born at the time I was born in, I suppose.
You have no choice in the matter. I just have always wondered about putting people in these generations. I'm part of a generation, and I don't know what it means other than, I mean, that's like having an astrological sign, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. The tyranny of the category, I suppose, yeah. But it does, I think it, humans, I guess we compare more than we think, so it's easy just to put people in the largest group you can possibly put.
Do you think you'll ever write 10-minute plays again?
I will not. I think Adam is going to give it a try.
I might. I don't know. It's hard. It's really hard to compress the story, but it's also fun, and it's a chance. This was more challenging as a director for me as well. It was as challenging as any long play I've done because of all the different things. But I think I didn't think it was going to be this hard.
I just got to say, Beckett, you know, if you take Crap's Last Tape is 8 or 9 printed pages, and it's got, a whole
life
in there. And it's, you know, you say to somebody, yeah, your legs aren't short. They're just as long enough as they need to be to reach the ground. So I'm all for plays of any length.
Adam Rapp and Will Eno are the bookends of 6 plays that are being presented at the Flea. That's at 41 White Street between Broadway and Church. It's Adam Rapp's play is called The Kitchen Timer. It opens the evening. Will Eno's Unum closes it. And they'll be running through December 30th. My great thanks to the two of you for coming by our show.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks. By the way, if you want more information about tickets, you can check out all the information on our show page at wnyc.org.